It's good to be back with you this afternoon and have this opportunity to continue our study. This morning, in our class period, we talked about the subject, did Alexander Campbell start the Church of Christ? You know, a lot of people believe that. A lot of people think he's the one that initiated what we believe in. Obviously, that's not true. Jesus Christ established his church. He said, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And so we worship as God would have us to worship. We work as God would have us to work. We are organized as God would have us to be organized in the Church of Christ. We mentioned this morning that in our worship service that you can trace the history from Genesis to Revelation by looking at the falling away and restoration of man. And so we spent a lot of time in the Scriptures this morning looking at those things. We're going to look at some secular history tonight. And I'll be honest with you, this bothers me to some degree to use a period of time like this to talk about secular history. But I think God wants us to know something about the history of His people. And as I said this morning, I think God wants us to know how we got here. Why are we here? How did we end up in this place? Why are you sitting in this pew tonight? Well, that may be because of something that happened hundreds of years ago. And so for a few minutes this afternoon, we're going to talk about how the gospel came to Northwest Alabama. Now, this is a combination of several lectures that I've given over a period of time. One is how the gospel came to Alabama. One is how the gospel came to Madison County. One is how the gospel came to Lauderdale County. Another is how the gospel came to Franklin County and how the gospel came to Colbert County. So I put a lot of things together here, and that means I had to leave a whole lot out. But I think it's important that we understand these things. Somewhere along the way in your lifetime, I think you need to hear these things. The things I'm going to talk about tonight, I would say most everyone in here has never heard before. And you will probably never hear it again. And so you have an opportunity to share with us in learning something about the gospel. Now you notice I left Limestone County out. Now Bobby, there's a reason for that. A couple reasons. Number one, Limestone County got left out in that movement from Madison County to Lauderdale County. And the restoration period in Limestone County was about 10 years later, I guess. And Bobby has done extensive research on Limestone County. So if you have any questions about the history of the church in Limestone County, just see Brother Graham. He'll be glad to help you with that. But I appreciate the work that he's done on Limestone County. So how did the gospel come to Northwest Alabama? Well, we mentioned this morning that there was a church located up in Viola, Tennessee. And that is the old Philadelphia church. And that church started in 1805. And there were some people from that church, William J. Price in particular, who came down south of Viola into Alabama, into Jackson County, and established the First Church of Christ in Alabama. Now, that's what most historians say. I think they're wrong, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. But the church that was established in Rocky Springs is the oldest continually meeting Church of Christ in the state of Alabama. The second oldest is the Stony Point Church of Christ in Lauderdale County, and I'll talk about the beginning of that church here in just a moment. But this building that you see here was built in 1830. There was a building prior to that built in 1805. I believe Benjamin Lim was the first to bring the gospel to North Alabama. And I believe he did so by coming to Madison County in 1809. He was a scout during the Revolutionary War. He was a Baptist preacher in Kentucky. He began to be convinced baptism was for remission of sins. And so he traveled from, LaRue County, all the way to Paris, Kentucky, and asked Barton Stone to baptize him for remission of sins. That was in 1807. He began preaching the gospel, and he moved to Huntsville, Alabama in 1810. He died in Madison County in 1814. And the area where he died and where his property was, or where his son-in-law's property was just north of Huntsville on 231, almost into Meridianville. After he died, his family moved to Lauderdale County about 1816. Now, the reason they didn't come earlier than that was because this property in Lauderdale County was controlled by the Choctaws. The Chickasaws. And the Chickasaws owned all that land on the north side of the river all the way to the Duck River. And so settlement in that area was limited. This is a copy of the deed that shows that John Chisholm, who was the son-in-law of Benjamin Lynn, bought property in Madison County on September the 18th, 1809. And shortly after that, this family moved into Madison County and they built a church there. And I believe that was the first Church of Christ in the state of Alabama. Now, he dies in 1814, and his son-in-law, John Chisholm Jr., who lived in Lauderdale County, wrote that he was buried in the graveyard of the church there in Madison County. This is the property that was deeded to John Chisholm when he bought that land in Madison County in 1809. And that road running north and south is 231. That's the Meridian, and it's just south of Meridianville. Benjamin Lynn died in Madison County in 1814. His two daughters and their families moved to Lauderdale County about 1816. Esther Chisholm's father-in-law was John Chisholm Sr. He was the agent for Chief Doublehead, who owned all the land from Elk River to the east, the mouth of Cypress Creek to the west, and from the Tennessee River on the south to 10 miles north of the river. And that land was called Doublehead's Reserve. Why did white people not live there? Because they were limited. In fact, there was a fort built over on the Elk River, just on the east side of it. And Bobby, you're familiar with this. And that fort was built to keep white people off Indian land. Probably the only fort in America ever built for such a purpose. These are the graves of John Chisholm Jr. and his wife, Esther Lynn Chisholm, the daughter of Benjamin Lynn, and they're buried in Lauderdale County, 4 miles north of the Cox Creek Parkway, just off of Chisholm Road, just a short distance outside of the city of Florence. Benjamin Lynn's other daughter was Rachel Despain, and she and her husband Marshall and their children settled in Waterloo and started a church there. Marshall died in 1825, and Rachel and some of the family left Waterloo for Texas in 1834. And I don't know if I mentioned that this morning or not, but in 1834, the church in Waterloo decided to go to Texas, and they hired a fellow by the name of David Crockett to lead them to Texas. Well, Crockett cooked them to Memphis, and he was in a hurry to get to Texas by March of 35 so he could get killed at the Alamo, so he just left them. And he went on and got killed in March of 1835, the church Waterloo made it into Texas to the Red River area, moved on down south of Nacogdoches, Texas, and started the first church in Texas, in just 10 miles south of Nacogdoches. One of the fascinating things about Lauderdale County is that there were so many gospel preachers in Lauderdale County, or men, boys who became preachers in the 1820s. This is just really an amazing piece of history. David, you're an old Lauderdale County boy, so I'm sure you'll appreciate some of this. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but here are some of the fellows that preached the gospel in Lauderdale County in the 1820s. Now, we're talking about way on back there. And among these people were Benjamin Franklin Hall, Carol Kendrick, Talbert Fanning, Mansell Matthews, Edie Moore, James Matthews, James Fanning, Alan Kendrick, Lynn Despain, and we could just go on and on. Talking about these fellows, I'm going to have to cut out my time as far as the amount of time I can spend on some of these fellows. But this area in red is the Doubleheads Reserve, and that was the land that was limited so that white people could not live on that land. About 1805, my family, my ancestors, were forced out of Lauderdale County. They'd settled there, but they settled on Doubleheads Reserve. And the Union Army forced them out. They had to leave. And they came back in sometime later. This is the grave of John Chisholm Sr., who was the agent attorney for Doublehead, located 4 miles north of Florence. By the way, I read the book Doublehead by Butch Walker. I didn't know who Butch Walker was. And I found out he was from Moulton. And I called him up and talked to him. I said, I love your book, but you had a mistake in it. And he didn't like that. He said, what mistake was that? And I said, well, you have John Chisholm Sr. dying in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1818. And he died in Lauderdale County in 1828. He said, I don't believe it. I've studied this man for 30 years. I said, be glad to show you his grave. So I took him out and showed him this grave. Now, I'm making a connection between the church and Doublehead, so don't forget that. In 1807, there was a meeting held with John Chisholm Sr., Doublehead's attorney, and the United States government. And a treaty was signed, which brought about a listing of property. What had happened is that Doublehead had had this Chickasaw land, and he was letting some white folks settle on it. And so the Chickasaws didn't like that. In fact, they murdered him about 6 or 7 days after this document was signed, and that was the reason why. But he was leasing land to white people. And if you'll notice down at the bottom of this, I don't know if you can read it, it says, to the above company, a 99-year lease, renewable for 900 years. What's the difference between leasing something 999 years and selling it? I think it's about the same thing. But anyway, where I'm going with all of this is this. Indenture made the third day of August, 1807, between John D. Chisholm, chief, in behalf of himself, an attorney, in fact, for Doublehead, the Indian chief, and the Cherokee Nation on the one part, and all these other people over here, these prominent people like John Coffey and some of these others, General John Coffey. But I want you to notice this. John D. Chisholm carved out of Lauderdale County 1,000 acres for himself. Now, why is that important? It's important because his son, John Chisholm Jr., was a member of the Church of Christ, and he moved into Lauderdale County on this property that his father, John Chisholm Sr., had gotten from Doublehead. Two earliest churches in Lauderdale County were the Waterloo Church of Christ, started by the Despains, Rachel Lynn Despain, and her family lived there, the Cypress Creek of the Republican Church, and that was by Esther Lynn Chisholm and her husband, John Chisholm. They started those churches. Those were the earliest churches in Lauderdale County. And there was another church that was started sometime after that, and that was at Gravelly Springs. And some of you may know where Gravelly Springs is located. Prior to the Civil War, there was a brick church building located there, but it disappeared during the Civil War. And that's probably because General James Wilson's army was camped there. He had 20,000 horse soldiers camped at Gravelly Springs during the Civil War. And he probably burned that building. There's no record of it after that. So living in this area in the 1820s were James E. Matthews, Mansell Matthews, A.D. Moore, Talbert and James Fanning, Allen and Carol Kendrick, B.F. Hall, and Lynn Despain. All gospel preachers are boys that would become gospel preachers and share the message of the gospel, not only in Lauderdale County, Northwest Alabama, but into various places of the world. Let me mention James Matthews first. James Matthews was the first agent for the Christian Messenger in Alabama. That was a paper started by Barton Stone in 1826. In fact, if you look at volume 1, number 1 of the Christian Messenger, and you look down toward the bottom there, you'll see Alabama. James Matthews of Florence was one of the agents for Barton Stone's paper. What were they doing? They were trying to teach the gospel to people in this area. He owned a mill on Bluff Creek. He baptized Talbert Fanning, and he sent three articles to Barton Stone in 1828 that were published in the Christian Messenger to convince Stone to once again preach the necessity of baptism. Stone had come to the conclusion about 1803 that baptism was necessary for the remission of sins. Now, we could spend all of our time talking about scriptures about baptism. You understand that. This lesson presupposes that you know all of that. And so we're not going to go over all that. But shortly after that, he quit preaching baptism for remission of sins. And he quit preaching it for 25 years. And I'll mention this again later on as I talk about one of these other people. But James Matthews wrote him and said, "Why don't you teach baptism for remission of sins?" And he said, "Well, I used to do that about 25 years ago, but it was like pouring cold water on a duck's back. People didn't like it, and I quit preaching it." Now, that doesn't speak highly of Barton Stone, does it? But because of a fellow in Lauderdale County, Alabama, and the articles that he wrote, and I've got a listing of them here, I'm not going to read all this, three different times Matthews wrote articles to Barton Stone. He published them in his paper, and Stone finally came back around and said, "Yes, baptism is for remission of sins." So what happened? This was published in 1828, 1831. The Stone Group and the Campbell Group came together. And they were able to do that because they agreed on the importance of baptism for remission of sins. How did all that come about? Fellow right here in Lauderdale County having an influence on Barton Stone. He also, there's a record of him buying 300 hymn books for the church in Waterloo. Now, I don't know how big the church in Waterloo was. But fellas, if you're ordering song books today, how many song books are you going to order for church? I'd say there were a lot of Christians in Lauderdale County in the early 1830s, I should say. And he mentions that again in the next year in 1833 where he'd ordered these books and they were sent to Elder James E. Matthews. Dr. Benjamin Franklin Hall is one of those that I could spend all of my time on. He preached baptism for remission of sins in 1826. Early in 1826, he was traveling through Kentucky in Gamaliel, Kentucky, which is about 6 or 8 miles from Tompkinsville, Kentucky. And there was a place there called Lion Creek. And he had some friends that had a cabin on Lion Creek in Gamaliel, Kentucky. He went to visit them. He's a Baptist preacher now, early 20s. And he's 23 years old. And he goes to their cabin, nobody's there, and he goes in, which was common at that time, and he saw a book. And the book was the Campbell-McCalla debate, which took place in 1823. And he read that book, and when he read it, he read about baptism for remission of sins. I don't know if I read this morning, but I'm going to read this again. Hall read this statement by Campbell. "I have affirmed that baptism saves us, that it washes away sins. Well, Peter and Paul have said so before me. If it was not criminal for them to say so, it cannot be criminal in me. When Ananias said to Paul, 'Arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord,' I suppose Paul believed him, arose and was baptized and washed away his sins." Don't know why people can't understand that. "When he was baptized, he must have believed that his sins were now washed away. In some sense, that they were not before. So when Hall reads that, he screams, 'Eureka! I have found it! I have found what a person needs to do in order to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ.'" So he sends a letter, or goes to see Barton Stone and says, "Why don't you preach this?" And that's when Stone made the statement to Hall, "I preached that 25 years ago, but it was like pouring cold water on the duck's back. The people didn't like it, and I quit preaching it." Hall came to Lauderdale County in the fall of 1826 and preached in that first gospel sermon on Cypress Creek, and it was a success. If I had time, I'd get into detail with that. This is Ephraim D. Moore. He was another preacher that lived in that area. I'm going to skip on through this. Alan Kendrick was baptized in a meeting on Cypress Creek in September of 1826. He became a gospel preacher. He was the older brother of Carol Kendrick. Alan baptized his brother Carol. He left Lauderdale County and preached for many years in Kentucky and Mississippi, and he baptized over 6,000 people. That meeting at Cypress Creek, Hall said it was not a success. He only baptized three young people, three teenagers. One of them was Alan Kendrick, who baptized 6,000 people. Another was the son of Marshall Despain, Lynn Despain, who led the Church of Christ to Texas, became a gospel preacher. It's amazing. The other was Talbert Fanning, who saved the church in the 19th century. There was a young girl that was baptized, and I have an article, a story about her. And she was interviewed in 1906, I believe it was, by a preacher in Florence. And she said, I couldn't amount to anything like the others. She said, but I did have 15 children, and they all became members of the Church of Christ. And my question is, who had the greatest influence? But as a result of this meeting, we find that the church was changed by these writings of these articles that were sent to Barton Stone. Buried in Alcorn, Mississippi. I thought this was interesting. I found this on his grave. It says, if you should where I'm buried pass and lowly kneel upon the grass, shed not a tear, breathe not a sigh, for all is well. 'Twas sweet to die. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to put on your grave? And then his brother, Dr. Carroll Kendrick, he was a part-time preacher. And this part-time preacher was a medical doctor, but he's believed to have baptized over 30,000 people. Now think about this. 30,000 people. And we have records of him in some of the literature in the 1880s of him having baptized 20,000 people. He left Texas, went to California, preached there for a number of years, and it's believed that he baptized 10,000 people in California. Part-time preacher. He was opposed to the Missionary Society, instrumental music and worship. He had a great influence in Texas in keeping the church from liberal influences. In 1890, he published a book titled Live Religious Issues of Today. I have a copy of that book, and I've preached sermons from that book, because you can take that book and open it up and look at the religious issues in 1890, and guess what? They're the same religious issues in churches of Christ today. Hadn't changed a bit. Among the problems were humanly organized societies, fleshly appeals to human methods in the work of the church, the need to cut off church amusements, the absolute necessity to return to apostolic Christianity, and scriptural authority. And while I'm thinking about that, let me just go ahead and say this. I hope you'll come back during the week, because Monday we're going to talk about the history of the Church of Christ in the 19th century. Tuesday, we're going to talk about the history of the Church of Christ in the 20th century. And Wednesday, we're going to talk about the history of the Church of Christ in the 21st century. And I probably have more material for that lesson than the other two combined. Churches of Christ are changing. Churches of Christ are getting further and further away from the gospel of Jesus Christ. And friends, we're going to have to take out our Bibles and follow them, and do what God says, and not what man has to say. I find this to be a fascinating thing. Here's two old fellows who were raised in Lauderdale County. You got Brother Kendrick and Brother Fanning. So Kendrick writes Fanning in 1860 a letter from Texas, and he says this, "We have just concluded another happy meeting some 30 miles west of this place on North Gabriel River. A number of our old Alabama friends are still pressing on in the service. We concluded, as the best guess we can make, that from Lauderdale County, Alabama, 25 years ago, we might now count some 50 preachers and perhaps 50,000 disciples in Texas." That's the influence that Northwest Alabama had on Texas. Texas was the promised land in the early 1800s, about 1830. Alabama was the promised land in 1805. People were flocking into Alabama because it was becoming open. Years later, they were going to Texas. And then Talbert Fanning, he was described as a man with long legs and short breeches. He was 6'6", weighed 240 pounds. That was when the average person was about 5'6", or 5'7", by the way. So he was a giant during his time. He was raised in Lauderdale County, And he was baptized by James E. Matthews in that gospel meeting on Cypress Creek in September 1826. He left Lauderdale County for Nashville, received a college education there. He became an authority in agriculture. He was one of the leading agriculturalists in the nation. As a college student, Alexander Campbell chose him to go with him on two preaching tours. He started many churches, including Franklin, Tennessee, Leapers Fork, Tennessee, Moulton, Alabama, and Russellville, Alabama. His greatest influence, though, was through Franklin College in Nashville. And among his students were William and David Lipscomb, E.G. Sewell, and T.B. Larimore. This man helped preserve the church during the last half of the 19th century because liberalism was coming into the church and destroying it, and he stood against it. He firmly opposed the missionary society and the use of mechanical instruments in music of worship, and those things took over the Church of Christ in the last half of the 19th century. About 85 to 90% of the churches and members went with the Christian church, went with the missionary society, went with the instrument. And so the church lost out in the last half of the 19th century. Dr. Mansell Matthews was another one of these great men. He became a doctor. He was the cousin of James Matthews. He was baptized in Spring Creek, about 4 miles from here, in 1823 by John Mulkey. And so he was one of the first in this area. He was probably Matthews who convinced David Crockett to lead the church from Waterloo to Texas and influenced the growth of the church in Texas. So how did the gospel come to Colbert County? Well, I had to put a line through that and change that to how the gospel came to Colbert and Franklin County, because they have to be considered together. But here is Colbert County, and here is Franklin County. But they were all one county until November the 29th, 1867. So they have to be considered together when you talk about the beginning of the church in Colbert County or in Franklin County, because they were all one church at that time. Tuscumbia was established in 1817, Russellville in 1819. I mentioned this morning that I was asked to speak in Russellville at their bicentennial and talk about churches of Christ. I did the same thing in Florence. I think it was the same year, 2019. Early preachers in Colbert and Franklin County. We mentioned John Mulkey. John Mulkey in Tompkinsville, Kentucky, was perhaps the first to preach the ancient gospel in Lauderdale County. We mentioned he baptized Mansell Matthews in the creek over here that starts with the spring in Tuscumbia. And that's probably the first baptism we know of in Colbert County. Another person was Abner Hill. We don't have a picture of him, but Abner Hill moved to this area in the early 1820s. He was an associate of John Mulkey in Kentucky. His sister, Cynthia Hill Chisholm, and her husband, Gillington Chisholm, were baptized by Abner Hill in the early 1820s. Mulkey came to Tuscumbia probably at the request of Hill. And so this was the beginning of the church here in Colbert County. We mentioned Dr. Matthews, who stated that he was baptized in Spring Creek in Franklin County in 1823, which is now Colbert County. And he was one of the leaders of the Church of Waterloo when they left for Texas in 1835. And then there's Dr. W.H. Wharton. I mentioned him this morning. And in 1834, he started the Church of Christ in Tuscumbia. He was converted by reading the Evangelist, Walter Scott's paper. And he was the son-in-law of Michael Dixon, the founder of Tuscumbia. This is a letter that he wrote to Campbell in 1834 from Tuscumbia, Alabama, October 24, 1834. He says, "Since our exclusion and separation from the Baptist denomination, 12 of us organized ourselves into a worshiping congregation to be called the Church of Christ in Tuscumbia, since which time the Lord has graciously added to our numbers until we have now about 30 members, living in great harmony, peace, and love, and meeting every first day of the week to worship Him who is the Lord of the Sabbath, to commemorate His death for our sins and to rejoice in the hope of life through His resurrection. He goes on to talk about all of the opposition that they had when they started the Church of Christ in this county. And that's the building, the first building in this county that was where the Church of Christ assembled. I'm going to talk about that more tomorrow night when I talk about the Civil War and the effect that it had on the church in this area. Dr. Samuel Sevier in Russellville, he was the son of John Sevier, who was first governor of Tennessee, and he was the only male member of the Church of Christ when the church was started in Russellville. And this is his grave, the gravestone in Russellville. It's been broken off. But Talbert Fanning came through this area in 1842, and he was left Nashville. He was going to Columbus, Mississippi, and he came to Florence to visit some of the old friends and old school teacher that he had. He came to Tuscumbia. He preached in Tuscumbia. He left there and went to Russellville. And as I think I mentioned this morning, he went through Colbert Heights because there was no road from Muscle Shoals to Russellville until the 1960s. That nice little straight road we have here, four lane and divided, it didn't exist until the 1960s. And so he goes to Russellville. First night he's there, he preached, had no success at all. Got up in the morning, I'm through with this place, left out of town. He got south of Russellville to about where Isabel is, and a spring on his carriage broke. And he and Miss Charlotte had to walk back to Russellville with their horse, Jacob Faithful, and they had to wait a couple of weeks to get a spring ordered, and he started preaching the gospel. And before he left, he'd baptized over 100 people, and the church at Washington Avenue was started in Russellville. John Taylor, I mentioned him this morning, who preached in this area. He was born in 1807, died in 1885. He was one of the prominent preachers in Franklin and Colbert County in the mid-19th century. He had an influence on the Strigley family and in obeying the gospel. Among his descendants were Hubert Black and Nick Woods. Many of you know them. Nick held a meeting here back in the spring. Now, Nick is a direct descendant of John Taylor. There are many descendants of John Taylor still living in this area and still members of the Church of Christ. And this is his gravestone located at the Shady Grove Church of Christ Cemetery in Colbert County, almost into Franklin County. Abraham Ricks is another person of influence in Colbert County. And this is his home, the Oaks in Spring Valley. Some of you may know that place. I asked this morning about that. I don't think many of you knew about that, though, did you? Okay. It's there. It's still there. And in fact, Stacy and I went out there last Thursday and went to by the plantation home. And this is where Abraham Ricks' plantation was located. He was a Christian before he moved to Colbert County. His son, Abraham Jr., was graduated from Alexander Campbell's Bethany College, class of 1848, and was a classmate of the famous gospel preacher J.W. McGarvey. Located on that plantation property, which really wasn't the plantation property, because there was a slave there, and this is interesting, that Ricks gave every one of his slaves an acre of land to do with what they wanted to. Not only that, he taught them to read and write, which was a violation of the law. He gave every one of them an acre of land, and they could raise a crop on it if they wanted to. Well, Parson John raised a crop at night, picked his cotton at night, sold it, and started buying property. And a part of that property is where this building is located today. This is the building we went to last Thursday. But the original building sat on that same spot, and that was the first black Church of Christ that I know of in the United States. Prior to the Civil War, blacks and whites worshiped together. So this is the Christian Home Church of Christ. Original building was built about the early 1860s, and this building was built about 1940. Parson George Ricks, a slave on the Ricks plantation, was taught the gospel by the Ricks family and became the first black gospel preacher in Franklin and Lauderdale County. He started a church on the Ricks plantation and is buried in the Ricks family cemetery. that's really a misnomer. He's buried in the George Ricks family cemetery on property that George Ricks bought from Abraham Ricks. First landowner, black landowner in Northwest Alabama. And he was a gospel preacher. Brother Ricks helped start several churches in Colbert and Franklin counties, including High Street in Tuscumbia, Sterling Boulevard in Sheffield, Reed Town in Russellville, Westside in Leighton, and Cherokee Church of Christ in Cherokee. He also established the Fayetteville Church in Talladega, Alabama. And so here was a very famous gospel preacher, a former slave who learned the truth and taught the truth, not only in Colbert County and Franklin County, but in various places throughout the state. And this is his gravestone, and on top of that gravestone is a Bible. He was a gospel preacher. So that's how the gospel came to Northwest Alabama. We've rushed through that, but I hope that these things have been informative to you, been of interest to you, and I hope they are faith-building for us. As we look at the trials and the struggles of these people that came before us, that ought to encourage us more and more to be what God would have us to be. To obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, believe it, preach it, teach it, share it with other people. Now, we've not talked about the gospel of Christ tonight, this afternoon. But I'm assuming that most people here have heard what is necessary in order to be saved. If you've not, if you have any doubts, if you'd like to study with us, we'd be glad to do that. But the Bible teaches us that we need to hear what God has to say. Well, that's just basic. And not only that, believe it. And believe that Jesus is God's Son, that He came to this earth and lived and died and shed His blood, dying on the cross, so that we could have remission of our sins, so that we could be saved, so that we could be restored back to God, because man had fallen away from God. If you've never been baptized into Christ, you're not a child of God. And so we ask you to give serious consideration to that. And if you have become a Christian and fallen away, we'll be glad to pray for you and assist you in any way that we can. If you're subject to the invitation, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.